throw balls far.
You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We got all kinds of topics that we can jump into. If you don't know, tonight we get one of the greatest things that happens in sports. If you don't know what that is, you're going to have to hang out until the end of the show so we can tell you. But one of the greatest things in sports happens tonight. NBA playoffs, Thunder blow a huge Game 6 lead, lose the series to the Dallas Mavericks 4-2. We'll talk about the series in whole, Game 6 as well. What is your disappointment level, Thunder fans? Are you just kind of, it's the start of something great? Or are you like on the, well, each chance is, you never know when you're going to get another one because of the nature of the league, the possibility of injuries and that kind of thing. But now that we've seen this Thunder team in the heat of the playoff battles, what do you do to improve? How do you make the Thunder just a little bit better? And then who do you think will be the starting lineup at the beginning of next season? A couple other series where I think a lot of people are pretty surprised how they turned out. The Pacers win the last two to defeat the Knicks and go on to the Eastern Conference Finals against Boston. And that's exactly what the Wolves did as well, as Minnesota dethrones the champs on their home floor last night to force their way into the Western Conference Finals against the Mavericks. And how bad do you think the league is panicking about the thought of an Indianapolis, the Indiana Pacers, and Minneapolis, the Minnesota Timberwolves, being in the NBA Finals? I'm going to go ahead and guarantee that ain't happening. There ain't no way. Metroplex and Boston versus Indianapolis and Minneapolis. Yeah, come on. All right, then we'll wrap up the PGA Championship. Xander Schauffele finally gets that first major. The story to me of this week and this weekend, though, and even yesterday, obviously Xander winning, but something else happened, and I don't know how this happened, and I don't know how he did it, but Bryson DeChambeau went in for, I think he has gone from one of those guys that nobody liked to it felt like he was the crowd favorite yesterday. How did that happen? And is he now the biggest loss for the PGA Tour of all the guys that went to live? Is he the one that they would take back first? A lot of talk about Valhalla and how easy it was. Obviously, we've never had some dude shoot 20 under par in a major and lose. Never had two guys get to 20 under in one tournament. Was it too easy? Was it just the conditions? Does it deserve another chance at hosting a major down the line? Excuse me. And now that Xander has won, who's the best not to win? Who's the best player to have not won a major just yet? 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things. If you've got something else on your mind, feel free to chime right in. And a lot of softball that we can get into throughout the week. As everybody, did everybody make it? All 16 seeds? I can't remember. Anyway, we can check into that. We've got softball. We've got baseball. What, Big 12 tournament coming up? Can OU and OSU host? Can OU play well enough to host the next round, too, if they were able to advance? So we got lots of topics throughout the day. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. Anything that's on your mind, we can talk about. If you're going to be outside the listening area, a couple ways to stay in touch with the show. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app has it all. Radio, the Penny News, Big Elk and Paragon TV. I can tell you this. As soon as I figure out how to do it, obviously the graduation, you can go back and watch on Big Elk TV. I also have that senior video. We just got to figure out how to post it. It's on the desktop of our computer that I got from Danny. So that'll be easy to just post that up to and have that available for all the folks on Big Elk TV. And, of course, the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you miss the show entirely, you can go check us out anywhere where podcasts drop. How are you, Jared?
I'm good.
How are you? I got to tell you, I know we were both outside a lot this weekend.
Hmm.
You don't look near as crab-like as I do. I got smoked yesterday.
I was very heavy with the spray-on sunblock, and I wore the bucket cap, you know?
See, bucket cap is a great idea if you're going to be out in the sun like that all day long.
But don't kid yourself. When I took my shirt off at home to take a shower, it's definitely farmer's tan going on.
Yeah, mine's further up my bicep than normal. I don't guess my shirt sleeve was as long as they usually are, and I've got it clear right in the middle, just beet red. I mean, I can feel it. I can still feel like the fever in my arms.
I made a mistake. This is where we're spoiled to have these turf fields out here at the Fiveplex. Is there's no blowing dirt.
Yeah.
I went right before our first game yesterday. I went and I, you know, caked on, sprayed on the sunblock all over the place, and then went out to coach. Wind was really howling yesterday. At least it wasn't Edmond, and that dirt was swirling.
It's sticking
and
to
I
you.
Realized that's not a tan. That is dirt sticking to me. But hey, that'll work. That'll block the sun too.
So how'd it go?
Pretty good. I thought it went well. Our 10U girls, we went and found that tournament in Edmond because we wanted our 10U girls to see really good pitching, and they got it. Went 2-2 on the weekend. They split 2 on Saturday in pool play and won their first bracket game on Sunday and lost the second one. But we got what we wanted, is that competition stuff that we're looking for. No offense to our teams out here by any means. Please don't take it that way. But I think coaches would agree with me. That's what you got to do to get better, is go find some really good pitching, and that's what we found. And even in losses, we did a lot of good things. I was proud of them. Our 8U, they just continue to roll. They went up there and won the thing and had tight two games, the bracket play on yesterday. They were down 5, had to come back from behind in the bottom of the 5th inning. They only play 5 in 8U, and in the semifinal, came back and won it by a run. And then second game, they got a big lead and held on and got the championship. Really proud of them. Still did the same thing for them, looking for, you know, those teams that we don't usually see around here. And we found some really good competition up there. And these girls just go in kind of businesslike. I'm really proud of them. Hit the ball really well. So it was a good weekend all the way around. Had fun at the Allstate, the hotel, had a little pool party Saturday night. It was fun. Good bonding experience for those girls. How's your weekend?
Hot.
It was warm.
Hot. That's, I mean, there's positives and there's negatives about that turf.
Mm-hmm.
And the negative is it gets hot.
It does.
And it feels like it reflects the sun differently. And you forget about it until the first weekend you spend when it's sunny. And then you come in on a Monday like I am, and your body hurts.
Yeah.
Because of the sunburn that you've acquired. I was fine. There was a point yesterday that I thought, this is going to work out nicely for me. About noon, closer to 1 o'clock, where it looked like the games were going to be over. And air conditioning, couch, and PGA championship were staring me right in the face. And then one of the games turned, and then I was there till 9 instead. But it was fine. A small little delay at one point there as that storm. It was one of the wildest things. We're sitting there watching. I mean, obviously you can see it.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's no big deal. It's clear. Barely even in northern Roger Mills County. It's moving north at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's fine. Umpire would say, well, where's that? I don't know, north of Cheyenne. You know, it's not even really even close. And then all of a sudden, it was like, it feels like it's getting closer.
Yeah. It's building
and,
right there.
And we start, yeah, like, ah, it's just building. And then all of a sudden, you see it start, like, literally changing direction. And then that's when the lightning got close, and it never rained or anything, but the lightning was pretty close to cause a delay. But then after that was over, it was beautiful. It moved off enough to where the winds weren't really fought. I mean, it turned into a pretty nice evening by the time it was all said and done. But
yeah, we were holding our breath driving home.
I bet.
And we decided to divert, and we got off at 101, went straight down to Binger and just hit 152 and over. Yeah, we're not even going to mess with that. I know it was kind of skirting I-40 for the longest time, but I was like, you know, I don't want a chance, and then all of a sudden it decides to make a southerly right turn.
Yeah, it was just kind of bouncing around. It's weird.
Yeah. So weird. You know, we just took our time. Avoided
it
that stuff.
Was definitely weird. All right, so I did have plenty of time to kind of monitor the golf tournament throughout the day.
You're going to have to fill me in. I just saw who won, but
it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You know, DeChambeau shoots 64 on a Sunday at a major and it's not good enough at 20 under par. And, you know, there's been, it feels like there's been a bunch of different times over the last handful of years where Xander, he didn't necessarily have a putt to win a major. It's not what I'm saying. But he had, you know, through a round or on a Sunday, he would have those, you know, 6, 10, 12 footers to either really apply some pressure, maybe take the lead, you know, one of those things. And he just never has seemed to be able to make them. But, man, yesterday he did. There's zero, like, okay, he just kind of lucked into that one.
Mm-hmm.
He had to absolutely go out there and take it. And that's what he did. It's kind of something that everybody's been waiting on him to do. You know, there was that stretch there where it seemed like he was in the hunt in every single major and was never able to go ahead and finish it off. But yesterday, I mean, he hit when he needed to hit a great shot. He absolutely did it. I thought, you know, the fairway bunker shot on 17 when he was tied for the lead, knowing 18 was ahead, a par five that is reachable into, you're almost planning on him making a birdie. So when he drove it in the bunker on 17 off the tee, you're like, okay, well, what's he? And he got it out on the green and made a par that allowed him then to be able to maybe make a birdie and win. And then he drove it just a little bit off the fairway, standing in the bunker to try to hit his second shot from, what, 258 or something like that. And it was a little bit of a – I mean, the ball was way above his feet. And he just hits this fantastic shot down there where it leaves him a pitch and a putt for his first major championship, and that's exactly what he did. And that, you know, they had a perfect view of that putt where it's right behind the hole, like on the like worm cam. And when he hit it, I didn't think it was in. I thought it was going to hit the left edge, and it just lipped right in there, and he wins the golf tournament. It's fantastic. A lot of it's going to be made of Valhalla, and how low the scores were. The conditions were just ripe for scoring with the rain. There was zero wind. It was soft. But I will say this about Valhalla. You think back to the four PGAs it's hosted, it has given us entertainment galore right down to the wire. Playoff with Bob May and Tiger Woods, everybody remembers in 2000. Looked like it might be a playoff yesterday. You know, Rory fighting off Phil and Ricky back in 2014. Mark Brooks, that was a great one too in 96. So there's something about that golf course that lends itself to having exciting finishes and bunched up leaderboard. That leaderboard going into Sunday was as good as it's been in a major in a long, long time. So it's like, okay, which is it? Do you want somebody to have to shoot 21 under to win a major? Absolutely not. But It was way more intense and way more exciting of a finish than the Masters was this year. You know, Scotty just ran off and left everybody on Sunday of the Masters. It doesn't seem like that ever happens here. And I don't know what it is about that golf course, just enough hard holes or maybe too many easy ones. But whatever it is, it gets an exciting finish each and every time. And so that was it was great all the way down to the last putt. Literally, the very last putt decided the thing. I don't know what else you can ask for. You know, is it that big a deal that if it had been to go to 11 under instead of 10, would he be sitting here raving about how great it is? No, you don't want to see 21 under. But I would rather see 21 under and win by one on the last putt than I would somebody be 13 and the other one be 9.
Yeah. Yeah, I know we've asked this question about the scores and do we like these really, really low scores as winners? I have no problem with it. And I almost, based on the course and its history, you almost expect it going in. And these are the best golfers in the world currently. And it's nice to – I think I take – how do I say this? It's I appreciate it. Like, okay, I tune in to watch this, watch these guys play at a high level, and they are delivering. I thought it delivered. I'm okay with it.
It's now the fifth and sixth time we've seen a score in a major championship in relation to par of 20 under or better. Jason Day at the PGA, Henrik Stenson at a British Open, Dustin Johnson in that COVID Masters that was played in November. A couple years ago at St. Andrews with Cameron Smith in the Open, and then the two this year. I mean, but think about two of the courses I just named right there. Are we never going back to St. Andrews for the Open Championship because 1 year it was calm and Cam Smith shot 20 under? Right. Are we going to not go back to Augusta for the Masters because Dustin Johnson was able to play in November, totally different conditions in Georgia, obviously? Are we just going to not go back to Augusta for the Masters? Of course not. And so I think that's one of the questions coming out of this will be with what happened on Friday, the congestion and all the madness with the even if a life isn't lost, you already were hearing, you know, just there's got to be a better plan. And then that happened and it really kind of shot that to the forefront. But you wonder, is this it for Valhalla with the scores, is that going to be it, or is it coming back at some point? I hope it does, because it does. It seems like for some reason you get really good golf tournaments there. But will 21 under and a 20 underscore not winning be enough to kind of push it away and get it out of the rotation? I do not know.
What about the incident? Is that going to?
I mean, it could. I mean, even if it's not. That's what I'm saying, though. I think there was already some grumbling. And a lot of times it's from media types that it's not just the easiest thing to get to a place or what have you, or they have to sit on buses that they don't want to. And then they're the ones that start chirping about it. And you already heard just a little bit of that it wasn't the greatest setup to get in and out of. I'm sure that'll be talked about, no doubt. As much as, you know, Scheffler's arrest is one thing, but somebody, you know, dying right in front of the gate to go in, that's got to be at least some sort of thought. And the scores being that low will obviously do that as well. I have a feeling it's going back just because of how exciting every tournament has been there. Even though the score is lower than what people may want, you're getting really fun, really exciting golf tournaments each and every time a major's been played there. So I don't think it's out of the rotation. It may be another decade like it was this time before it gets back, 10 to 15 years, but I think it'll be back.
Yeah.
One of the other things that came out of this, I couldn't believe the support in the galleries for Bryson DeChambeau. And, you know, that Wednesday at Augusta when we were there, there's always going to be kind of a murmur through the crowd. You know, when we were just sitting behind the range watching everybody hit balls, and all of a sudden here he comes. And I think there's always going to be that attraction to him because of how far he can hit it. And it was like, holy Moses, this dude is completely different than anybody else out here, just with the length that he can hit the golf ball. It's something to, I mean, just if you've ever played golf here, think of it like on the driving range here at Elk City.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think he might be able to hit it to the dam. Like, that's how far it goes. Like, I'm not kidding. I think he might be able to hit it to the dam.
100%.
Which is just crazy. But I really do. I think he
would try to hit it over the dam.
He might. Yeah. And he might do it. But that gives you a point of reference, right? But so that's one thing that – but that doesn't necessarily mean people – you didn't think that meant people liked him. I mean, he made the comments about Augusta being a par 67 for him back in the day because of his length and all that. You know, he's got the clubs that are all the same disc, they're all the same length, and you know, he's pretty quirky, but I also think that he has matured a lot more than you realized.
No, I think we were saying that even before the Masters, weren't we?
Yeah,
I was hearing that rumbling that he was turning into this likable guy. And have you seen the video, the viral video of him tossing the ball to the kid?
Yeah, and stealing it from telling the dude to give it back to the kid. Yeah,
he's straight up pointing his club at him. Get it back to the kid. That was cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think he has. We've had this discussion, but now it's coming to my mind, back right before the Masters, and he's turning into this. It's like somebody got to him and said, or maybe it's just he got older, and maybe he's just maturing, you know. I don't know how old he is. I'm going to assume
25.
Yeah. So... But or somebody got to him and said, you got to be more of a likable guy.
He's 30.
He's 30. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a turning point. He turned 30. I'm 30. I don't want to be known as the jerk of golf. So I like it. Makes it easy to appreciate how he can slam the ball and all that. You know,
of all the live guys, I think. You know, at the time, when a lot of these guys jumped ship and went to live, I think he was one of those guys who was like, oh, well, you don't have to put up with him anymore, right? Like, it was like, yeah, great. We don't have his quirkiness, his weirdness. They can have it. And now fast forward these couple of years later and seeing kind of what he's transformed himself into from a likability standpoint, I think he's the biggest loss of anybody because he's already has that mystique about him because of the length and because of kind of the different things that he does. And now that he's become a likable guy, I'm not so sure he wouldn't be or shouldn't be or isn't the biggest star in golf from a TV standpoint. I'm not, maybe not from a winning standpoint, but from a TV standpoint, I think he is. I think he's the biggest star in golf. And now Liv has the biggest star in golf. That's a pretty big blow to the PGA Tour that I don't know that people saw coming when it actually happened. Last thing, now that Xander Schauffele, he was obviously in the conversation for best player to never win a major, if not the best player to never win a major. He wins. Who's it now?
Active players?
Oh, yeah.
I had to Google up some names to see if I was right or wrong.
He finally quit wearing that ugly golf hat. That helps out with Bryson instead of that
Kegel thing.
Yeah. Now he just has, you know, a hat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, names were thrown in there. I don't know if he can do it. I've seen crazier things. You know, Ricky Fowler's.
He's got to be in the conversation.
He's in that conversation. I just found a list here. And I hope it's not too dated. I think it was. But what about like Matt Kuchar?
Yeah.
Poulter? Finau? And those are names you hear on Sunday, but they just can't break through. What about who do you think it is?
I think there's a couple of – I think the two best players to never win a major are too young to be considered on this list. Victor Hovland and Ludvig Åberg. I think those are the two best that haven't won a major yet. But they shouldn't be compared to, like, Ricky. I think Hovland's only played in 18 majors.
Yeah, I was going
to
say
– Åberg's played in three or two. Did he play?
I mean,
in the
what
PGA
qualifies
last year?
To be on this list? How many you've played for and not won?
More
and how long you've been playing?
I think that's more of what people think about when they think of this list. Mm-hmm. You know, like you know, Xander's been a really good player for coming on a decade on the tour and hadn't done it. You know, Lee Westwood was always the answer to this. Colin Montgomery. Back in those, it was always the answer. Hell, Phil Mickelson was the answer for a long time before he finally won. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I do think, like, to not be unfair to the younger guys, you need to have been around for a while and just not able to get – Ricky Fowler is absolutely that person. Patrick Cantlay is absolutely that guy.
Yeah.
Finau is that guy. You know, there's just those names that you know. You know, Poulter is or was. I don't know if he's getting on in age. Well, you know, like think of like Sergio Garcia, how good Sergio Garcia was to never win one, and finally he broke through. You know, that's probably more like to me. Ricky Fowler is probably the guy. When you think of this question, you come to him. He won the Players, but he's been you know in the limelight for so long, and just not able. To pull one off. I think he had that 1 year in, what, 2014 where he was top five in all of them. Didn't win a soul. Didn't win, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of got out-dueled at the end of the major championships that year. Just couldn't quite get over the hump. So it's probably him, Kuchar, Cantlay, or Finau. If you consider longevity, if you just consider who's the best out there right now that hadn't done it, it's Victor Hovland. With Oberg, completely unfair to him. I think it's his second. But that's how good he is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think either one of those guys really can be. You know, 4 years from now, if Victor still haven't won one, he's going to be the number one player on this
right.
list. Without a doubt in my mind. But I do think it's just a little too early to have to consider those guys, you know, as because you know what that list really kind of is? Failure.
Yeah.
And it's too early to consider them
like
failures in the majors.
Yeah, like this list I found of guys who've never won a major, but then it lists all of their accolades. Like, well, they've won this, they've won this one, they've won this. That's pretty dang good.
And it's
you know?
And it's a tip
just
of the cap.
Ricky, yeah.
It's typically the cap to those really young guys that they're that good already.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think you can consider them yet. It's probably Ricky.
Yeah.
With everything that he's done.
Another question is of all time.
Ooh.
That's a whole nother discussion and research.
We'll have to think about that. Hanging out here on a Monday with our friends at Rother Brothers. Rother Brothers is a family, family-owned dealership, started by its three owners in Kingfisher, Oklahoma in 1976. Remains a family-owned and operated dealership still to this day. It has expanded out to three locations, Clinton, Fairview, and Kingfisher. At Rother Brothers, they pride themselves on creating a one-stop shop, providing all sorts of equipment, parts, and repair services for many makes and models. They have excellent service, a huge selection of parts, exceptional support. For the customers, which are the cornerstones of their business. That is Rother Brothers on Highway 183 north of Clinton.
Hey, I'd be remiss not to mention Seize the Gray winning the Preakness.
I never even thought about that on Saturday. At graduation when it was happening. Now, why do you mention that?
Well, my wife's uncle is part owner in that horse. And it's a lot of owners. He's not like one of five. There's a lot of owners, but he's part owner. So you had a little invested interest watching that. And let me back up. We didn't watch it. It was a funny story on that. But he was there, and his wife was there, and witnessed it. And so they had some really special weekend over there. Had some great memories made. But when we were finished with our games on Saturday, and as soon as we pulled into the parking lot of the hotel, get a message, group message, family, said, race is about to start. And like, oh, okay, well, maybe we can get into the lobby anyways and watch it. And then it felt like just a couple minutes later, my phone started blowing up. Allie's phone started blowing up. OMG, are you kidding me? Wow. I said, you got to be kidding me. Did we just miss this race and that horse won? And sure enough, it did. That was pretty cool. Pretty cool. Seize the gray. Winning the Preakness.
Very good.
It was fun. Fun to go back and watch anyways.
Very, very cool. Yeah, Mystic Dan was second after winning the Derby. I imagine Mystic Dan will skip the Belmont without the chance.
Looks sloppy, didn't it? You see the...
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture right here.
Conditions look sloppy.
NBA playoffs. Oklahoma City Thunder fall in six games to the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference semifinals, 117-116. Oklahoma City led game six basically the entire night. I think they had it. I think the largest lead might have been 17 there in the third quarter. There are just too many periods of offense kind of going stagnant, and Dallas would make some runs. And next thing you know, it was a great basketball game all the way down to the very, very, very end. A lot of people are still cussing and discussing the foul call on Shai Gilgeous-Alexander there in the corner against P.J. Washington that led to the three free throws, of which Washington made two to take the lead and then missed the last one on purpose because the Thunder are out of timeouts. You know, and then should you challenge, should you not challenge? Because if you lose, then that timeout goes away. I think in the moment, I would have been immensely disappointed if they didn't challenge, because you see the replay immediately and he's got the ball in his hand. It almost could have, like, asked for a jump ball. I mean, the double pump, and he clearly hit him on the elbow, and you're not real sure what the rules are, because, you know, there was a challenge earlier in the series in which, you know, it's one of the Mavs hit the ball then raked across the arm, but it wasn't in a shooting. And I think the double clutch, actually, from what I've read or listened to or what have you, that the initial play was fair, but then when he double clutched it, it was like restarting the shot, and that's when the elbow was hit, and that's why the foul was allowed to stand instead of kind of what we saw the time before. But all in all, it was a great basketball game. The Thunder played, to me, that they looked like by far the most like themselves at any point in the series, at least on the offensive end.
Started better.
Yeah, it started way better.
But
the one thing that didn't continue is when the offense cranked it up. I mean, 116 was a number that they couldn't even fathom getting to in a lot of those games because of the way Dallas played defense. But when Oklahoma City finally was scoring, then in the second half, the defense left them, giving up 69 second-half points to the Mavericks, just crushed on the just absolutely crushed on the boards, especially in the fourth quarter. Seemed like when they would make stops, Dallas would get the rebound. Dallas had 14 offensive rebounds to 7 for the Thunder, out-rebounded by 16 for the game, 47-31. And that just, you know, in a game obviously that close, a play here, a play there, a rebound here, a rebound here, and, you know, we might have a game 7 tonight. Instead, Dallas wins the series, and Oklahoma City bows out in the semifinals.
Yeah, the rebounding, that was lingering. The thing that stuck out to me, especially in those runs in the fourth quarter where they couldn't stave off Dallas and just giving up rebounding. And it looked like you'd see it, they'd give up a rebound. There's a point where it was like a 7-0 run, 8-0 run. Rebound, offense, or a Dallas rebound, they go down, pop a three, and then, like, it happened like that. And my hands were in my head, like, oh, what are we doing? Rebound the ball. But I thought, well, it's been like kind of like this all year. The rebounding has been an issue, and it's a glaring one that they're going to have to address in the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you think through, look back at the season, and a lot of the rebounding discrepancies were able to be masked in certain games by the difference in the turnover. And here's the deal. Out-rebounded by 16, but you forced 9 more turnovers than you gave up. So that cuts that more than in half, and that's why when you look at the attempts, Oklahoma City took 10 more shots than Dallas. And that's what – ultimately, I guess that's what you kind of look at to see how that works. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But the numbers are staggering, but also when they happen. And it did feel like, in the, especially in that fourth quarter, when Dallas was pushing back to take leads and end up winning the game, that's when it's like certain offensive rebounds you give up are more crushing than others. And it just felt like Dallas got every one of them in the fourth quarter, and it led to a kickout three seemingly every single time. And that was the difference. And Oklahoma City being able to move on to a game seven tonight versus go home with a 4-2 series defeat at the hands of the Dallas Mavericks. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens from now moving forward. And that'll be discussed and discussed all summer long until something does happen. What's your level of disappointment with bowing out as the one seed in the semifinals?
Well, if you've listened long enough, you know it's not as bad as maybe some that are overreacting to this would be. I've always said that this team was ahead of schedule by getting the one seed and winning that first playoff series. We're really even if it was whoever it was in the first round, it was the fact that this was a young team that has not been in that situation. They go and play New Orleans and then sweep them out and give a valiant effort against Dallas. So I'm not overly disappointed. Missed opportunity, sure, but still a young team, a young core that's going to have a lot of expectations going into next year. And I said this to somebody on Sunday morning. It's like, now listen, next year the expectation is probably going to be like Western Conference Finals or bust, and that's where it's going to be disappointing. But I've always said whatever happens in the playoffs this year was a bonus, and they've learned a lot, gained a lot of that playoff experience, found some tight games that one they've won, and this one obviously they've lost, and I think that they move forward and come back better because of it. But I'm not. You know, tearing off my Thunder jersey, crying in shame because they lost this series and the season's over. I'm not. I'm very excited what the future holds for this franchise. Very excited.
I think for the, you know, rational Thunder fans, I think the disappointment is less after actually watching the Mavericks play.
Yeah.
You know, a lot was made going into it by the people that thought Dallas would win, about how much different they are now versus before the trade deadline. And I think those people were proven correct. It's a way better defensive team than it was prior to the trade deadline. And what they did, and isn't it wild how much Oklahoma City facilitated some of the things that make the Mavericks good? You know, making the trade at the deadline for Daniel Gafford, that happened because the Thunder agreed to kind of swap first rounders. Mm-hmm. Take one later on down the line, give up one that's a little bit more current, that way that they can then make that trade for Gafford with Washington. You know, think back to the draft. Derek Lively may not be a Mav if the Thunder don't make a trade. You know, I mean, it's really weird how the two big guys that really controlled the paint in this series both are Mavericks with the help of the Thunder.
That's just the nature of the beast, I think. From what everything that the Thunder have acquired, you got to give up stuff, and sometimes it just comes back and bites you. That's the business of the NBA.
No doubt. But I think if you'd have said, okay, Oklahoma City's losing in six games to Dallas before the series, I think more people would be mad.
Uh-huh.
But once you watch the games and see how good the Mavericks became and the team that they have become, I think that disappointment level lessens just a little bit because maybe – I mean, I did. I didn't have any – I picked it in five and felt really good about it. And after game one, I was like, see, told you so. Everything that you thought – advantages for Oklahoma City proved to be advantages in game one, and the problem was those kind of went away as the series continued to move along. All right, so now that you've seen this group of Thunder in the NBA playoffs, what do you look to improve to be a conference finals, NBA finals type team in this run that everybody expects to be anywhere from 3 to 10 years.
It's weird to say this because the way the game has evolved from a small ball run and gun, shoot a mass amount of threes game that's turned into. But, I mean, we talked about the rebounding, and I've gone back and forth with in my mind about how do they improve. Do they need a big guy? Do they need – I've thought, do they need a – not like necessarily a guy that is going to go and get you a rebound, but a big guy that can create rebounds for not only himself but other players, which is so weird to say because the game is not – it's kind of gone away from – that necessity, but maybe in this case it needs it for the Thunder. So I'd say maybe find a guy that can create opportunities for you, for your team to get rebounds. Don't ask me who that is. It could come in the draft. It could come via the trade, free agency. I have no idea who that could be. There's probably some well fits out there that Sam's going to go find, but that's my opinion. Find a big guy.
So the interesting part about this is going to be
Or Chet needs to get bigger.
Yeah, well, that's – I mean, Chet had 3 rebounds. That's unacceptable.
No, yeah. No.
He has to have more in 35 minutes. The problem – the quandary here, I think, for the Thunder is this. A lot of what makes them really good is the way they play offensively, and that's 5 out. Don't clog the paint. Now, they played 5 out all series, and it looked like the paint was clogged the whole time. Now, they finally got a defensive 3-second call there in Game 6. It's like, huh. It looked exactly like the rest of the series, you know. But I don't know if it's simply a case to where if they do get somebody, you know, do you have to change everything you do offensively because now there's somebody in the way? I think that's probably the biggest kind of obstacle. Because you see how free-flowing, but once again, the playoffs are different. The offense wasn't quite as free-flowing. There wasn't as much space. The other team's trying way harder on defense. And so bumping cutters and getting to shooters, you know, it's not just a random Wednesday in February. It's, you know, every single game matters way, way more than any regular season game. And so it's obvious to me that rebounding is the deficiency. Now, how do you fix it? And do you compromise what you're trying to do or trying to build or the style you want to play? Does it have to be compromised if the right guy isn't available? You know, a lot of people say Steven Adams. Guess what? Steven Adams does not fit with what they do. So if it is a guy like that, how much are they willing to change the style that they've started to play with? The style that, oh, by the way, led Golden State right to 4 titles over this run. But they had just – think about their big – I think that's what you're looking at or looking for. Is think about the big guys that Golden State had, like an Andrew Bogut. He wasn't the greatest player of all time, but you know what he could do? He could move a little bit and he could shoot while also being a big guy. Like, to me, a younger version of, say, Brook Lopez now. For the
That's the guy that came to my mind, like a Lopez.
Or Miles Turner. Miles Turner in Indiana, who can rebound but also can move and shoot. That's what the idea of what Chet could be eventually, even though I don't think he's ever going to quite be what people think he is just because he's how tall he is. He's not ever going to be, you know, he fights his butt off. He plays hard. There's no doubt about that, especially, you know, at the rim. the thing about him is, to me, you know, a lot of guys wouldn't do what he does because they're afraid of hurting their pride, getting dunked on. Doesn't bother Chet. He gets dunked on. He comes right back the very next time and does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that's try to protect the rim as much as he possibly can. So rebounding is clearly the deficiency, clearly the weakness. And there's some other things, but here's what I do know. And, you know, Justin said you got to capitalize. I agree with the idea of that because nothing is guaranteed. Russ could get bumped into by Patrick Beverley on the best Thunder team there was, and that run is over. KD could fracture his foot and that run is over. You know, and that those things are always happening to somebody in an NBA season and in even in the playoff run. Those things always do happen. There's no doubt about that. But as much as there's nothing guaranteed, and that's true, I don't get overly worked up about this one because I don't even think their championship window is open yet.
Right.
I don't think it was ever realistic for this for that team, this team in this season, to make the NBA Finals or win the. I just wasn't realistic to me anyway, because of the lack of. It's just you don't see it. It doesn't happen that way in the NBA playoffs. You have to take your lumps. You don't just fly in there and grab the title the way that Oklahoma City would have this time. And so you have to go through those battles. So you have to earn it. Like, you know, you have to pay your dues. And to see now how to change it and however that looks to Sam Presti, I think it will be fascinating. Because going into next year, they're going to have four roster spots open. They're going to have $35 million in cap space, and they still have 17 first-round picks in the next, five or six years.
Yeah.
And so how those assets end up being allocated to build around what they've obviously got as a really nice foundation, it's going to be, you know, the key. And the one thing about having all that flexibility is you do have it. But once again, you always have to make the right choices. Otherwise, you end up kind of what we saw last time. Stuck.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it'll frustrate everybody if we don't see a big major swing this summer, probably involving Josh Giddey. But the one thing is, if you start to try to take those major swings and acquire money on the books, that's when the flexibility goes away. And I think that's one of the, if not the biggest advantage the Thunder have right now, is they are so flexible with what they can do. And making it into the semifinals of the Western Conference and having a real chance to win that series, I think it's only going to speed the timeline up in fans' minds. I don't know if it will in Presti's mind. I just don't.
No, I agree.
We'll find out.
Yeah.
What do you think the starting lineup is next year?
Well,
game one.
They're going to have to make a decision on Giddey. For financial reasons, he's coming up at the end of his rookie contract, if I'm not mistaken. He would be eligible for an extension. I think they would probably move on from him. But so I think you know it's going to be your big three in SGA, J-Dub, Holmgren, Dort, and then I don't know who they go get, but I think if four out of five will return to the starting lineup. Will they go with Isaiah Joe or whoever they go to get what we think the need is? So that's kind of my vague answer on that one.
I think it's exactly what it was all year.
Do you?
I don't think they're getting rid of Giddey. Not for nothing.
No, not for nothing. I don't know. I feel like they're going to move on from him to fill a need.
21. He's been a good player. Now, they could also be blowing smoke by saying a lot of things that they do to try to make it feel like they feel he's more important to the other teams and maybe entice a better offer.
You know, I had some time this weekend between a game, and we went to go get something to eat, and we hopped over to this little shopping center, and I went into a store. I won't say what store. For advertising purposes, but it's a store where you find some discounted clothes, right? I'm not afraid to say I dress for less. Wink, wink. But, you know what was on this for sale rack?
Josh Giddey jerseys.
Josh Giddey jerseys.
Oh, I think the fans are done with him.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
They're not moving, so they just put him on this for sale rack.
It may not be the same
$30
idea with the front office. When it's all said and done, it's going to be I really don't think there's outside of SGA and J-Dub and Holmgren. I really don't think there's anything off the table at this point. But I also would say Presti is, to me, notoriously patient with a lot of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he'll make a move if he has to, and if he feels like he's, you know, backed into the corner or what have you. But I think it's going to be a lot less dramatic than most, probably.
The offseason?
Yeah. Especially,
well, if the window's not open, do you think he's going to open it? That's what I'm saying. Do you think he's going to...
I think it naturally opens next year. Now, listen, I think it's open right now. It has opened because they've been to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And seen what it's all about. Hanging out here on a Monday, wrapping up the show with this. We get one of the greatest things in sports happens tonight. Do you know what that is, Jared?
I did after looking it up.
Tell the folks.
It would be a Game 7 in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
That is correct. And you know where it would be a great place to watch Edmonton and Vancouver in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, of course, that'd be Boomtown.
The Boomtown Grill. We tried to go the other day, and it was so packed.
A little busy.
It was, I'm talking packed.
Clearly, advertising works.
Was not a seat in the house. Like, literally, tried but couldn't. And that's a great thing, because the Boomtown Grill, the word is getting out how good the food is, how good the drink specials are. Pizza, pastas, burgers, sandwiches, cold beers, wine, house drinks. The house favorite is a smoked old fashioned, the classic cocktail with the modern seasonal smoky twist. 12 big screen TVs, happy hour 2 to 6, Monday through Friday. Appetizer plates and drink specials as well. Go visit the Boomtown Grill like about everybody did over the weekend. 2103 South Main in Elk City. The Boomtown Grill, open every single day of the week, 11 to 10, Sunday through Thursday. 11 to 11 on Fridays and Saturdays. Softball, you looked it up. Only two of the top 16 seeds lost.
Yes.
One of which will be headed to Stillwater, Oklahoma, as Arizona went over to Arkansas, upset the Lady Razorbacks. So it's Arizona and Oklahoma State in the best 2 out of 3 super regional series. Oklahoma was able to get past Oregon, and so they get Florida State. Rematch of last year's championship series will be in Norman. I saw the schedule for that, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I think game one is Thursday night on ESPN2, possibly. I saw the Sooner softball tweet that out, but I can't remember exactly. I might have woke up in the middle of the night and saw that. So both in-state schools still on track to reach Oklahoma City again, which that would be obviously so much fun. Yeah, Thursday at 6 for OU on ESPN2. The other series, Oklahoma State will play Arizona. I'm looking here. Georgia plays UCLA. We get A&M at Texas.
Yeah.
In Austin.
Be fun.
It's going to be a lot of fun. The softball is.
You get an SEC matchup in Alabama and Tennessee.
Yes. Yeah, it's a really good like football rivalries.
Yeah,
are coming to the softball
field.
Yeah,
they should play the OU Florida State one in the Orange Bowl somehow. Just bring a softball field in.
I don't think Florida State wants any part of that. That has not gone their way.
That's true.
It's not gone their way at all when those things have occurred. Let's see. Yeah, Baylor goes to Florida. Mizzou lost that first game, but they came back and held on.
Came back and got it.
But they get Duke, which I know, thinking back to all the pundits that pay a lot more attention to it than I do throughout the season.
A lot of people like Duke.
A lot of people thought Duke should have been a top 8 seed and would have been a host. So Duke, Mizzou, you mentioned the Bama, Tennessee, A&M, and Texas. Also LSU and Stanford. And UCLA and Georgia. Oklahoma State, where are they at? I don't see them. Oh, yeah, there. I'm sorry. I was looking in the wrong place. So their first game one is 7 o'clock on Friday for OSU in Arizona. OU starts Thursday. We play Thursday, Friday, Saturday for 3, if that's the way it goes. Also, Big 12 baseball coming up. this week.
Was that Wednesday? Tuesday, the first round games. Wednesday, OU-OSU will play. Not each other, but they both got byes. I saw that floating around, too.
We've got National Golf Tournament starting on Friday. Yeah, let's see here. All right, so Tuesday. Yeah, OU and OSU don't play till Wednesday. OU plays at 12:30. And then OSU would play at 7:30 on Wednesday. There's a whole bunch of stuff there that's hard to read without me really studying it. So I'm not even going to try to tell you who they might play.
The possibility of four teams for both of them.
Okay, so
they get the lower seeded.
Yeah.
OU gets the lower seeded winner of games 1 and 2, who involve Kansas State versus Kansas, West Virginia versus TCU.
So if TCU wins, OU plays TCU.
Correct.
And then on the other side, OSU would play Texas Tech no matter what if they beat Texas.
Correct, because they have a 10 seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the options for OSU, Cincinnati, UCF, Texas, and Texas Tech. And as you mentioned, K-State, KU, West Virginia, and TCU are the options for OU.
So my guess would be OU's opponent will probably be
the winner of Kansas State and Kansas?
Yes.
I would say that's probably right. Pete Hughes, maybe.
And then
is it in it? Yeah.
Maybe Cincinnati. I would say Cincinnati for OSU.
You know what doesn't look right?
Texas Tech at 10
Texas
seed?
Texas Tech being the 10 seed. That's exactly
OU made them look silly in Lubbock a few weeks ago.
I think they hadn't been swept in Lubbock since 2011.
They got run ruled. No, that was Baylor. Was that Baylor?
I don't remember.
Well, they did the same thing. They made Baylor look silly. Mm-hmm. Baylor's usually a good team. I guess Skip Johnson's good job for him.
What do you think needs to happen? I saw already a ranking out today. Had OU number 8.
That'd be cool.
What do you think they need to do? Would a Big 12 champion, a title, I think, definitely gets probably a top 8 national seed. They need to make it to the finals, win a couple. What?
The latter there. I think win a couple. Don't go
2 and Q.
Win a couple. Baseball's a funny sport. I mean, they could get on a roll. And I mean, this is how it kind of started a couple years ago. They got to the Big 12 tournament, went and won it. Got wrong, got all the way to the World Series finals. But, yeah, I think just win a couple, and I think they could be right there in the top 8.
Yeah, I do too. And that'd be something.
They're quietly becoming, I mean, obviously a top 10 team that no one's really paying attention to.
They got a good team.
They got a really good team. They're fun to watch. It is reminding me of this, the way that chaos brand of baseball that Johnson's brought to OU. It's reminding me of that same run when they went to the finals, like I just mentioned. Great hitting, aggressive hitting, how I describe it.
Yeah. It's
rotation solid.
It'll be interesting to see exactly what happens.
It's really cool that OU 1, OSU 2 seeded in this mm-hmm. thing. That's cool.
Yeah, you can see some. You're going to get to see a lot of baseball and softball around these parts here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
And as always, hopefully, we get to see it against each other.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great Monday. This has been the Skinny on Sports.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.